The dream is alive.
GiantKiller.co and the By George Podcasting Network present the By George Podcast with Brian Lawrence and Chris Jones. The original George Mason basketball podcast.
They're on their feet. Here, Hancock! Oh! Off the top of the backboard, no. Loose, Hancock, front court, Mason. Long base hit point, George Mason.
By George, the dream is fading. It's been a little while. Recently on Hey 10, Petey Buckets and Grant Lebeds had none other than Joe Lunardi on their podcast. We wanted to let that episode simmer for a little bit, but now we're back. Chris Jones, Brian Lawrence, say what's up.
I'm happy to be here, question mark.
Yeah, I mean, we were just kind of talking, doing some show prep, and you know, it's interesting to think about, have we ever seen like a fall like this? You know, we're talking about winning the most games. You know, I think, what, we won the most games in a row to start the season.
Yeah, we were breaking records left and right to start this year. We had 2 5-game winning streaks. You know, things that we weren't doing over the course of the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. And historically, we had never started 11-1. But, you know, to see us start 11-1 and then suddenly we're 13-8 like that, I mean, you can define this as a free fall. I mean, this is an absolute botch. I don't know how else to define it. It actually kind of felt like, to me, Coach L's second to last season, the 2009-2010 season, where, you know, we started okay, but, you know, we were actually pummeling through the CAA. We were 10-1, 15-7 overall, and then we just finished 17-15. Like, we just completely fell apart that year. It kind of has all the same feelings of that season. And so, you know, I don't know. Like, can we recover? Is there a bounce back? Like, what?
Probably not.
Yeah.
But on the podcast today, we're going to do a slight recap of our last 5 games. Going to talk about the notable highlights. Going to touch on the pulse of the fan base. You know, at the end of the day, yes, we run By George and Giant Killer, but we're fans at the core, and we're going to give you kind of our pulse and just what we've noticed from the fan base as well. And then also in that, going to discuss some frustration. But up first, here's a note from our sponsor. The Giant Killer team would like to kick off this podcast thanking our title sponsor for the 2019-2020 basketball season and beyond, the law firm of Condori, Murad, and Neeson. It is through this partnership and support that we hope to expand our reach in providing coverage for Mason Athletics at home and on the road. The KMN law firm can help you with many of your legal needs, whether it be helping you start your business or do you need assistance drafting a will or going through the probate process? Or even, if you're having property or construction-related issues, this is the law firm you want to reach out to first. With 2 convenient locations for Mason students and alum in Fairfax down the street from the Mason main campus and in Arlington near Mason's Law School campus, the KMN Law Firm is your source for legal services. Give them a call at 703-385-2080 or visit them online at www.kmnlawfirm.com. And be sure to let them know the Giant Killer team sent you. Okay, so let's recap some games here. There's not a lot of...
We don't have to go that far back. Like, we don't have to... Like, this started way back at TCU. Like, that was sort of... That blowout loss kind of started the free fall. But, you know, I don't want to go too far back, but let's just kind of go back the last 5 games. It's a good sample size. Start with at GW. That was a loss, 73-67. You were there, actually, at Foggy Bottom. Another just like disappointing loss in the sense that GW was far worse than us at the time. The expectation was that we were going to win, or at least, you know, we're favored, and, you know, we let a freshman scar us.
No, it was tough. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, they didn't really, it was another game where it wasn't really that close. I mean, it just, you know, yes, it was, and we only lost by what?
Six.
So, but it just like, we never really had energy. It always, we always kind of felt deflated. I don't know. It was tough in the sense that it's a team that before A-10 play starts, you kind of circle it and say, that's a for sure win. You know, how do you get to at least 500 in the A-10? Well, it's beating GW.
And especially if you start 11-1 and GW is kind of known to be in a rebuild. So, like, you know, now we look like we're in the rebuild as well. So, you know, it's hard to kind of classify us as being some sort of powerhouse now. But the expectation is you got to take advantage of GW while they're in this sort of, you know, they have got a bunch of people transferring out. Their coach is still young. A lot of young players. You got to take advantage of them, you know, at this moment. So losing to them bombed. But what also bombed was losing to Richmond the very next game. We gave up 97 points. Like, yeah. We put up 87, but we gave up 97 points to Richmond.
Good. It's not good at all. And, you know, it was a Richmond team that also had a big injury in Francis. So, yeah. Sometimes it's hard to use your excuses, right? Because you say, all right, Kai or Francis, put them on the same page. And then where do you start from there? Grant Golden is just a monster.
And it's safe to say, like, Richmond's good this year. Like, okay, we lost to Richmond, but this is also a team that we're notoriously pretty good. I think Dave Paulson has a winning record versus Richmond throughout his tenure here. So we typically play them pretty well, and it was just another case of us getting completely lit up. Notable performance in that game was Javon Green. This was the first of his 30-plus performances where he had back-to-back performances. He was the KMN Law Firm Player of the Game that game. Completely dominant, but, you know, I know that you touched on it before. He had to play somewhat hero ball in that game.
First of all, AJ Wilson versus GW, KMN Law Firm Player of the Game. So, yeah. So far we got AJ and then Green. And Green, yes, he dominated. I mean, well, when no one else is scoring, someone has to step up and take control and say, "I'm, you know, this is my time."
Yeah.
You know, this is, if no one else is shooting the ball, then let it fly. And we've talked about the green light now for, you know, what, three seasons. Yeah. And he scored 39 points in 39 minutes with four rebounds and four assists. And he's a guy that you look at and you wonder, why can't he get more assists? You know, he can get to the bucket. He can hit the outside shot. Why can't he drive and dish? And that's an area in which I think his game is lacking. But, you know, how do you hate on 15 for 22, 5 from 10 from 3? And he had 5 steals. One of the craziest games. He pretty much, you know, was the only reason that we were any bit competitive in this game. You look at everybody else, you know, it's a standard show.
Sure.
You know?
And it was easily one of the more dominant performances in Mason history. I mean, I think in perspective, what was that, like the most points scored at EBA? Something like that? Second most?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he's well deserving of the KMN Law Firm Player of the Game. He did it again versus UMass. That was, fortunately enough, a game that we won. But again, he put up 30 plus points. You know, that was a game that was kind of going back and forth until we kind of came on strong a little bit late. And, you know, we executed pretty well. Everything, like, looked kind of like normal, you know, early season Mason during the UMass win.
Yeah, and the reason why the UMass win impressed me was because I kind of looked at that as like a Josh Aduro versus a Trey Mitchell. You know, mm-hmm. Two freshmen, similar size. Aduro actually played 27 minutes that game, so got a good chunk of the time. That's something that I think, you know, has really hurt our season thus far and is a stain on DP. We haven't really picked a center and ran with them. It's always split time between mm-hmm. three guys. And at one stretch of the season, AJ was getting the most of the minutes at the five position. You put him at the four and watch him dominate. I think you got to, if it's Oduro and that's your guy, then give him 27 plus minutes. But to go back and forth with him and Kalix constantly, Kalix is in the starting lineup that game, but only gets 13 minutes. I just don't see how that benefits either one of the players.
At this point, it's like, what's the fear? Like, we're at this point just trying to not be in the pig game. So just throw a Durr out there for an entire game. Give him 30 minutes to kind of run with it. See what he does. Let's see what kind of stat line he puts up. And then maybe next game run with Kaliks for an entire game. I don't know. But it's not like we're at the point of, you know, we're trying to play, it's almost like Paulson's like still trying to find the perfect mix, and we're too deep in this season and too, you know, kind of out of the picture to really need to make these like really, you know, specific strategic moves. Like, just throw someone out there at this point. I mean, throw a lot of the younger guys out there. We're at the point where, you know, we just want to finish above the pig game. So
yeah, the UMass game was
that helped us. Yeah,
that we saw two freshmen score above 10 points, get a bulk of the minutes at their position. It was another game in which Hartwell was out, so, you know, it's pretty much the XJ show. I believe he could score a lot more, but still young. Sometimes he doesn't pull up when he should, doesn't always get to the basket, even though we all know he can. But that UMass game, Trey Mitchell still kind of balled. I mean, you know, yeah, I think Josh held his own, but you can see why Trey Mitchell will probably be like top three center in the A-10 for the next 3 years.
I mean, McCall has some talent. Like, I think that he has like a bunch of 3- and 4-star level recruits. So they're clearly a little bit too early. You know, if McCall stays around, maybe we can see them develop and UMass can eventually become something again. But as of right now, we're completely dominating them. You know, whether we're good or we're bad, we just beat UMass. So
that's Paulson just hasn't lost to McCall. And if you look at their overall rankings, Paulson's now 34-29, including A-10 tourney, the last four seasons. 8 of those 34 are against UMass. So 26-29 against everyone else. So basically,
yikes.
Paulson has dominated, you know, McCall 8-0 versus him. And it, you know, it's just like, at this point, the fans just got to laugh at us. You know, it's like they're losing to Mason this many times in a row. It's got to be tough. But let's move on to the next game.
Personally, should we even wear Mason gear if we're going up to UMass? Like, we might get, like, jumped. Because if I'm a UMass fan, I hate Mason, right? But, you know, I don't know. Maybe they just don't care.
And true story, one time Chris and I went up to Boston, and we almost got jumped waiting in a line to go into a bar because this dude misinterpreted something Chris said. Got in our face, and then this group behind us took our back, and all of a sudden it was like 5 bros versus 5 bros, and Chris and I just kind of slipped out of that line real quick.
Yeah, we got into the club. It was like some nubby club from Fenway Park. So,
So next we play Davidson, another beatable team in the A-10.
I would classify Davidson as the opposite. Like, Davidson could be good or bad, but they always find a way to beat us. And Davidson isn't really that great this year, but they just looked like normal Davidson. Like, they just took us to it was a complete blowout. I don't care what the score should. I mean, it was still a 15-point loss. It felt like more.
And 15-point losses kind of feel standard. Yeah. You know, like, it's close. We're staying in it at halftime. We're in an approaching position to regain the lead. And then it just kind of fizzles out, and we lose by double digits. That game, Goodmanson again balled on us.
What's new?
He's been balling on us. He played all 40 minutes. All 40. Had 27-10 and 4 assists. I mean, the guy is just a monster.
I know.
It's just like, he's kind of like a Cam Long, where he has the length, he can do it all, he can hit shots, get to the bucket, can facilitate, and it's just kind of hard for us to guard, especially during the Otis era. He always shut Otis down, and we didn't get much bigger at that position, so I don't think things are going to change. Luckily, he's older now.
He's got that little bit of gray hair, right?
Grady, a guy that, you know, people are picking to go to the NBA, played 34 minutes and had 5 points. I'm thinking he's going to return to Davidson next year.
Yeah, I never really thought that because I think he tested the waters earlier in the offseason this previous year. I don't know if I see it. Like, he definitely was promising as a freshman, you know, a bit of a volume guy, but, you know, still very talented. But, you know, there's a bit of a regression this year, and he's going to need another year.
So to no shock, the two leading scorers in Mason that game were A.J. Wilson and Javon Green.
Wow. And the KMN Law Firm player of the game, A.J.
Right. It's just, and spoiler, he's like the he's probably going to be the KMN law firm player of the game for the rest of the games. So it's either him or Green, unless we, you know, unless XJ pops off.
Right.
But it's tough. But he had 30. He had 18-6. Just kind of been dominant lately. So let's just take that right into the URI game, the last game we played. Another double-digit loss, lost by 14 at home. A game that it was close, but featured Tyrese Martin going off from three-point line, a guy that shot like sub 20 in the A-10 so far from the three-point line, goes off on us, has 18, 10, and
it doesn't even matter what he had. What we had was nothing. And you know, it's just same old story. You know, another game in which it's at Mason and we're blown out and the fans are leaving early and there's a lack of energy. You know, it's just becoming just this, you know, repetitive, same type of offense, same type of outcome, same type of everything. And we're just like in this really deep funk right now. We still have yet to really beat a high quality opponent. Again, our notable wins in the A-10 are not notable. They're our only wins coming at the hands of UMass and LaSalle, both bottom feeders. So there's just nothing to really be excited about. You know, and throughout all this, you know, the recap of the last few games, we did lose Kyer. I mean, that's knowledge that every Mason fan clearly knows by now. But so things aren't going to get any better, but I wouldn't necessarily blame the current slide on Kyer because we obviously did just fine without him to start the year.
Yeah, I mean, the narrative was that, you know, maybe the out-of-conference stretch was a good thing because it prepared our guys to play together and gel. And some of us, and Kyer didn't even return to the starting lineup as soon as he was able to come back. I mean, you know, there was the thought process that he may mess up a good thing. Well, those same guys, I think the Hartwell injury, you know, although I think he has his limitations, I think that Hartwell injury, and not just his injury, but his funk before his sickness,
like he was starting to slip a little bit. His shooting was off. He was not as efficient from deep. He was just kind of, yeah, sort of on his own little slide prior to his sickness or whatever he has.
And when he's playing his best, we're the Cayman Classic champions, you know, and it's just like the drop off there has just been, you know, hopefully it's nothing too serious.
But you don't want to blame the success of our team comes at the hands of, you know, Jamal Hartwell. Like we can't, it's hard to like specifically define like what's causing this. You know, I don't know if it's collectively as a group, everyone's just kind of phoning it in and they, you know, they've kind of committed to where this season is going. Or, you know, I personally can't pinpoint it. Like, I don't know what's adding to this. Obviously, we're not making our shots. Yeah, I know. But, like, why now?
Well, the teams are tougher.
Okay, but we're, like, losing to GW. Like, well, GW's not bad. Okay, but they are. So,
what about it's an unforgiving schedule?
Do you want to get to that? Should we dissect that DP quote?
Okay. No, not yet. Not quite yet. I want to touch on, you know, looking at like the Rhode Island guards and just being super jealous. So you got Russell, scored 15. Doughton gave Paulson a big hug, was highly recruited by Paulson. Didn't land
he's,
him.
He's been my favorite player in the A-10 for the past 4 years. I mean.
So when I sent out that tweet, you agreed. It was kind of like a by George agreement tweet.
I've absolutely loved him from day one.
Yeah, he kind of has that late 90s, early 2000s game where he hits the mid-range jumper, can get to his spots whenever he wants to. And then you have Martin, scored 18, had 10 rebounds as a guard. You know, you look at those three, and that's the difference maker right there. You know, no one else, they did have another double-digit score, but no one else dominated like they did. And that just, you kind of, you take their three guards, you line them up versus our three guards. And I believe, actually, we did have a Jordan Miller sighting this game. Somehow Green only scored 4 points all game long, which is Jekyll and Hyde, something that we can get into later. But another performance in which A.J. Wilson scores 23, has 9 rebounds, a ton of blocks, and is our player KMN law firm player
of the game. But here's one thing. URI, they're good. Like, they are really good, actually. I mean, I just think that they are sort of a model of, you know, consistency in the sense that they lost Hurley They were able to do a quick little rebuild, hold a lot of their key players, recruit, fairly well. And look at where they're at now. They're right back at the top. Like, they lost their beloved coach, their Coach L type guy, and, immediately, found the successor, and they're right back, like, on court. Had, like, one little rocky year. And it's, yeah. And
they're getting votes.
I would be...
It's like all we want.
I would be shocked if they're not in the actual tournament. I actually do think that they're good enough to actually be there, maybe a play-in game type of situation. But Rhode Island is a very good team, and a very important game tonight. I don't know if I want to date this when we're recording this podcast, but Friday night they are playing VCU in Kingston. So that'll be sort of a telling game of, who's jockeying for that 2-3 position in the A-10.
So notable highlights. Let's just get to it real quick. Javon's back-to-back 30-plus performances, crazy. We actually, our whole staff was like diving in to figure out the last players to do so. Follow at the Tyler Byram. He's given out all those type of stats. Started 11-1. We were riding high. We put out, you were looking to see if we were getting votes. We were looking up stats. It's the last time we had done something like that. Well, we're currently 13-8.
It's very tough.
It's tough. AJ Wilson, another highlight. I mean, the guy has, last game he's out there hitting threes, doing it all, hitting fadeaway step backs. He had a baseline dunk recently that was just put a guy on a poster type. And he's just kind of showing you everything, getting rebounds. He's still top five in the nation in blocks. There's a big conversation going on right now with diehard Mason fans of if he's going to transfer or not. And I can't imagine our roster next year without him. And it's not even a conversation that I want to have with you quite yet, Jones. But, he's performing that well.
Obviously, the selling point
with the situation
for
given.
Staying would be, I don't know. Because he's
right,
redshirt.
He did redshirt. It depends on his credits. It depends on his grades, all of the above. Would he get more playing time somewhere?
He's pretty much going to max out here in terms of minutes played, and it's only going to go up even next year. So
he's an overseas player
he'll be in the Czech Republic, just absolutely dominating guys that I can't even pronounce their names. So, yeah.
Can you point to another
of his
highlight
or just of in general?
No, Mason since the last time we did a podcast.
Hollow. Like Javon putting up 39 in a loss where we give up 97. It's kind of like these are all great little highlights, but they're all associated with typically losses. And so it's hard to really find highlights in losses. But yeah, there's not really. I'm racking my brain and cannot think of anything that I've seen positive. I think I saw JDS hit a three. That was a few games ago, but that's kind of where we're at this season. So yeah, we're 13-8 and struggling to find highlights. But it's been a strange trip. And the funny thing is, we were so strong. We started 11-1. We won the Cayman Island Classic. We beat New Mexico State in that championship game. The funny thing is, New Mexico State hasn't lost a game since December 14th. So they've almost gone undefeated relatively since the Cayman Island Classic. So they've almost gone the other way, whereas we're a bit in a free fall. So yeah, it's just a weird year, a year where everyone's going to get a little bit of false hope, a year where our segment, a few podcasts ago with Fool's Gold, I mean, that actually came to fruition. I mean, we were talking about, is this fake? And at 13-8, we realized that, yeah, it was a bit fake.
Pulse of the fan base. Like I said in our intro, we are fans first. Sometimes I think about returning to being a fan, to sitting in the stadium, to leading cheers.
Mason.
I mean, we do the George.
Mason.
George. And it sounds that quiet. Like, the people on the other side don't even know. It's up to, like, the cheerleaders. and no one's teaching them. So it's just like the green machine's yelling George, cheerleaders are yelling Mason, no one's participating. And I'm getting to the point where it's like, does Giant Killer switch directions and improve the fan base by diving in and getting season tickets again? Because the pulse of the fan base just
but do we really want to like bury 33-year-old men in the student section teaching 18-year-olds how to like stand up and cheer for a product that's getting blown out by 15 points routinely, you know, game in and game out? It's like tough. I mean, we need a little bit of help from the product on the floor. It kind of goes both ways. You know, they feed off of them and, you know, they feed off of them, but something's got to change. You know, like, I don't know, man. I do agree with you. I do miss being a fan and being able to say and scream whatever I wanted to. It could be, you know, positive or negative, but, you know, now that we're media, we sort of have to watch what we're saying, but
where are you at? Because like, I'm going to be honest with you, Jones. I'm going to be honest with you. You haven't come to many games, and I would be willing to bet that if we were winning, you know, dominate, like, you know, being competitive in the A-10, that you'd be like, man, I got to get to this big game versus the Bonnies to see if we can finish fourth,
and all that.
Like,
where are you at? And I witness a blowout. I watch Santos Silva completely murder us. And then there was one day I was actually up at work in Arlington and contemplated going to the GW game. Thank God I didn't go to that. But it's like it has gotten to the point where I know if I make the effort to go to the game and, you know, you have to do the 2-hour trip home, you know, am I going to witness a loss? And now the notion is yes. And so do I want to sit there in the car for 2 hours driving home late night, you know, sitting there, you know, just thinking about this huge loss and just getting more and more dejected. And I don't know, like it, I could understand why some fans are just not showing up. It's hard to not have any type of home court advantage. But it's hard to show up and just watch L's. So we're in this vicious cycle right now.
So here's
where one is contributing to the other, which is contributing. And, you know, we got to break that cycle.
So one way I tell the pulse of the fan base is at Mason Hoops, masonhoops.com. We've been going to those message boards now for years. So, you know, right now it just kind of feels like it's all burning down. Everyone's fighting. It's combative, name calling, to the point where we have moderators and such deleting or telling people to delete stuff. So now they're trying to control the narrative because we're fighting to the point of name calling and ridiculing.
Yeah,
and it's just like that to me shows the pulse.
When there's fighting amongst the base, I mean, that's just where you know exactly where you're at. I mean, you're clearly at the point of the season where you're over it, and now you're just angry, and then everybody has a reason as to why we're losing or why we're falling apart, and then people think that you're pessimistic, oh, you're blindly optimistic. You know, you just have this feuding amongst the base, and it's frustrating. And, you know, you are at the point where you're seeing, you know, threads of, you know, fire Paulson, or, you know, should we start to look into who our next coach should be? You know, maybe Paulson maxed out. These are some of the things that are happening within the fan base right now. These are conversations that are being had. I'm sure that they're happening in the green room whenever, you know, we're down 20. So that is a conversation. Is there a hot seat? Sure. Like, if you were to look at the sort of how this season has fared, you would come to the conclusion that yes, Paulson's seat should be kind of hot, seeing as what he's done over the, you know, the course of his tenure here at Mason. But financially speaking, he is under contract, and everybody kind of knows that he's going to be here next year. So that we can safely kind of say, I not 100%, but, you know, I'm pretty sure he's going to be here next year.
Especially with the class that he has coming in. So, you know, you think he's going to get another year with those guys. But so far, checking the pulse, we've listened to the breath. That's Chris Jones, kind of a little bit more removed than myself, lives in Richmond now. We got his take. Then we checked the wrists. That was, you know, looking at the boards. And now, you know, what really kind of seals the deal of the pulse for me, checking the neck area, is we're now comparing DP to Paul Hewitt. All fans, not just some fans, like everybody is having that discussion now. So we're entering the realm of Hewitt, who Virus. People described as a cancer, called him Blue It. We're now comparing DP to that guy. And I think that's the final kind of blow to what
You know, too deep into the internet and message boards to figure out the pulse. You took a fantastic picture. Someone took a fantastic picture of Brad at the GW game with that look. And, you know, when Brad's looking like that, or when Brad's not showing up to media, you know, post-game pressers, it's a bit of a flag. You know, you have to wonder what's going on in his mind right now, because this was his hire. You know, this was his first, you know, and arguably his biggest hire that's going to happen here at Mason. So
a guy who's been linked to, you know, getting AD spots at big football schools, you know, hasn't necessarily hit here. And, you know, I can't knock the guy.
Fantastic.
Truthfully, he's great to us. I enjoy him. Yeah. So I don't want him to go anywhere. But I think that this next year is, you know, Paulson's entire resume is going to be on the table. This is not just how do you perform in your sixth year. This is the two-year season. This is Jared Reuter. This is, you know, what did you do with Marquise and Jenkins? Did you maximize their skill sets? You know, that's a guy in Marquise, you know, went on to play in the G League. So, you know, it's you kind of have to throw everything out.
I actually went a step further, and I brought up his entire resume stemming from when he became a D1 basketball coach back in 2008. So we have a 12-year window of what he's done, you know, between Bucknell and here at Mason. And what I found was he's had four seasons of 20-plus wins. And, you know, it's an arbitrary number. Yes, I get it. 20 wins doesn't necessarily mean grand success, but that's kind of how we've defined success here at Mason recently, because we've only had one 20-win season in the past, like, 6 years. So he's had four seasons of which he won 20 or more games. But all four of those seasons, three of them which came with Mike Muscala at Bucknell, so he eventually went on to play in the NBA. You know, could you tie some of that success to that particular player? Maybe. And then, you know, he couldn't win 20 games his final two seasons at Bucknell, got picked up at Mason, had the surprise year where he won 20 games with a few of Hewitt's guys, Marquise Moore, you know, he ended up in the G League. So, you know, could you maybe say that he needs elite talent to succeed? And I kind of have to say, yeah. You know, this notion that Paulson does more with less hasn't been proven. I haven't seen a year where he's taken a bunch of two stars and won 25 games. I'm seeing him succeeding with guys that are in the NBA or damn near it. But, you know, and do we have that type of talent on the roster right now or incoming? And you have to, you know, kind of ask yourself, do we? I don't know.
And people say, you know, well, look at Bucknell now. Dave Paulson built that. But what kind of kills me about that is, you know, Nathan Davis, a guy that coached at Randolph-Macon, and that's where I would take my players every single summer for team camp. So I got to really know Nathan Davis. He would do like a coach's clinic with us, and we got to pick his brain. And I even was about to apply to a position there to be a grad assistant. But my wife said no because she didn't want to live at Randolph-Macon. So, you know, I have pretty good experience with him. And to say that, you know, Paulson built the Bucknell team kind of undermines him. A guy that's probably going to move on from Bucknell and continue the climb. A guy that I would love to have at
Mason.
Well,
also, if you want to give if you want to give DP the 89 wins in the four seasons after he left, then you got to give Hewitt the 20-win season after he left that Paulson had. So then you have to look at yourself and go, well, did Paulson win any 20? Like, what has he done here at Mason then? If you want to just, you know, actively give him wins based off their previous, you know, that gets way too complicated. I'm going to judge you for what you're doing at, you know, your particular school in your particular situation. You know, we can call, the thriving stock market that Trump's enjoying is due to Obama. I don't know. You can only control what you can control. So DP has, you know, some success, but I don't know. You kind of hope, obviously, at this tenure, he would be, you know, positioning himself for a top four spot in the A-10, and now we're currently positioning for a not bottom four. You know, we're trying to avoid the pig game. It's not where you want to be.
No. And so, you know, I went to the URI game, and I went to the presser, and it was primarily Giant Killer in attendance. And so once that happens, I feel, you know, obligated to ask a bunch of questions. And you know, in his opening, he said that the schedule, he said, we're playing an unforgiving
Ooh.
Schedule.
Ooh.
And so I had to clarify.
The fan base is already on
because you hear that.
Dave,
and
Dave.
We just went through our last five games at GW versus Richmond at home versus UMass at home at Davidson. We get URI at home. That's not unforgiving.
It's not unforgiving if you haven't played Dayton yet. Like, I got it. If you went on the stretch that the Bonnies, you know, just recently went on, St. Bonaventure went 0-3 versus VCU, Dayton, and URI. That is an unforgiving stretch. But you can't have an unforgiving stretch with GW and UMass and Davidson thrown in. Like, you're just playing the teams you're going to play every year. So that one struck a chord with the base, and it did not help. It did not help the perception of DP. And, you know, is this going to be a quote that are some, like, famous last words? Like, is that a quote that he's going to be held to and people are going to bring up? And I don't know.
And that's why when you look at, you know, people always talk about, you know, By George doesn't ask the right questions. It's like, you know, but I mean, we're getting to say that it's an unforgiving schedule, Jared Reuter's top five, 2 year season, all things that he's told us directly. So it's, you know, that one just kind of got me. Typically, I don't like to like take one line from a, you know, a whole monologue and dissect it too much, but I just thought that was so off base, given that the schedule is not tough, given that the teams that we play twice besides like a VCU
given the fact that our strength of schedule for the most part, you know, of this season was rated in, you know, the 300s of college basketball. It was quite the opposite. Your unforgiving schedule was actually quite forgiving in the sense that it gave you an 11-1 record. So now that you're falling apart, you want to say it's an unforgiving schedule. Well...
And then praise teams like GW when they beat you. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's getting tough. It's getting tough to defend him. And so that's why we're just going to move it on, because I think the fan base has come to accept that he's going to be here next year. So
yeah, we're not going
to trash
really,
him. We don't need to put up billboards quite yet. But if next season at this time is similar to this season, then you're leaving, you know, donors and our AD
no
choice.
You want to be critical when you know when given the opportunity to be critical. I mean, if you're you know, currently in a spiral, a free fall, whatever you want to call it, it's okay for us to question things. I mean, when we're 11-1, you know, we're riding high, we believed in things, and, you know, we're thinking about, like, can we do this, that, and the other? Well, when you go 2-7 after that, of course, you got to question some things. You got to be critical of the guy. You got to start dissecting his quotes and asking questions and being frustrated. And you know, I think it's, you know, it's okay to ask these questions. It's okay to be frustrated.
Yeah. So let's move it along, because there's not much more that needs to be said.
Or else it would get quite violent. Like, we
look
get,
ahead.
You'd have to get that censor button out.
Look ahead at the Bonnies. So we played them already at home.
That was
didn't
tough.
Even score 50 points. So, you know, again, they're going to have their full roster. They're going to be ready to go. And you already displayed the three. I think they beat Fordham after those three games, but it was an OT. So it's kind of hard to read the Bonnies currently. First, started off the season winning their first four A-10 games, I believe, and
you know, and they always play us very well, and so, you know, if we do beat them once out of every like four games or whatever, it, you know, these things happen. We usually catch them at a low point or something, but the Bonnies will beat us. We're gonna lose. We're given a 25% chance to beat them using ESPN's matchup predictor. You know, there's The Bonnies have some quality wins. They're actually identical in actual their overall record. They're 13-8, but their players are more defined by their positions. Like Osuni, he is their prototypical center. He's practically averaging a double double. They have guys that can score. They have their guards. You know, everybody kind of knows what they're doing. Just Bonaventure, even when they're struggling, they're still a pretty good program. They're a team that I always kind of like, and they always sense, to me, they know how to compete. So, they're right now in the thick of things. If they win against us, they suddenly become 6-3 and they jump all the way up to like fourth place in the A-10. So it's a crucial game for them. For us, we're just trying to avoid Pig, in which we're currently in it.
You're looking at guys like Kyle Lofton. I've been harping on this that we cannot mm-hmm. really defend the bigger guards. And you look at him and you say, oh well, he's only scoring 14 points a game. Javon scores 14 points a game, but the difference maker there is he's also getting 6 assists a game, which will lead you to believe that sometimes he's getting 8-10, and sometimes he's getting 4-2. So there's games where he's popping off, getting assists, getting his teammates involved, and that's just not something that we've had, and not something that we've really had under DP this entire time. Otis wasn't really an assist guy himself.
On Lofton's 14, how you kind of compared him to Green, who scores 15. The difference being that Lofton gets, there's his game logs, 14 points, 12 points, 14 points, 32 points, 17 points, 17 points, 17 points, 19 points. That's consistent. The thing is, Green could have 39 and then 4, and he's going to average 14 out of all that. Lofton is going to get you his 14 game in, game out. Just seems a little bit more consistent.
Yeah, and then you look at Oshun. At this point, he could be like the most important player to his team in not only the A-10, but a lot of college basketball. I mean, the reason why they've lost games is because Oshun was hurt. So, it's like, it's tough because, every team is going to deal with injury. Everyone wants to use injury as an excuse. But here's a situation where I think it's completely validated. I mean, the guy is a monster.
Wow. It's like Larry Sanders-esque.
We don't have, and we threw AJ at him primarily last game. I don't think that worked. I'd like to see, our centers kind of hammer him, send him to the line, make him earn it, have AJ, beat their next biggest guy. But you're going into this game at St. Bonaventure,
we're not very confident in terms of home court. The Bonnie fans are as diehard as any fan base. So it's not like you're going to go into an empty gymnasium and you're going to have a few 65-year-olds sitting there. You're going to get some crazy drunk kids up in, northern New York, upstate New York, and it's just rowdy. And I always respect the Bonnies, the players, the coach, the fan base, for what they are. I don't know.
You know what beats everyone? Us every time? You know what beats us? 3-point shots. Giving up open 3-pointers. And they got Welch and English both almost hitting like 35-37%. The last thing how do you defend this if you're Mason? They can hit threes. Their guard can get to the lane, can also hit threes at almost a 30% clip. And then you got Oshun kind of dominating the paint. It's just not a matchup that bodes well for us. In fact, it held us to less than 50 points at home. So it's another game on like a Saturday night where we got to decide, are we going to watch this game?
We're not at the point where we're like questioning if we're going to watch. We're going to watch, but I think what's starting to occur over the course of this season is just that sort of numbness to when you lose, that sort of you start to not care as much. I mean, I know that I was, just so heartbroken over like the early loss. Like TCU was crushing. It was a blowout, but I was like, damn, I really wanted to win that. But it's like, our loss to Rhode Island, I was like, okay, that's expected. Okay. We have such a defeated mentality right now, and you just don't care.
If it's a beautiful day out, 4 o'clock on a Saturday, maybe I tell the wife, let's go do something fun. You know, like, it's, for me, it is kind of getting to that point. And that takes us back to the pulse of the fan base, where it's like, well, you'll notice when you're posting stuff tomorrow, our game day will have like 2 retweets and 7 likes. You know, our posts will like get interactive. Like, our posts will have interaction from like Kaufman and Allen.
Well,
that's who we are.
The only posts that actually do get traction are those that were somewhat, where people are critical of Paulson. And so, like, one of the more active posts we had recently was the quote that DP had, and people were just railing into it, retweeting it, and you know, it's just kind of where you're at.
And that's where we're at. This has been By
KMN
George, brought
Law
to you by
Firm.
KMN Woo. Law Firm.
What do we got to say here? We're closing out, you know, tough year, but always looking forward to Brooklyn. There's always hope in Brooklyn. Anybody can do it, even Fordham. So,
no!
Brooklyn!
Sweet! Till no, Brooklyn!
No, this season.